Hi, guys, and welcome. This is Jen Gaeta Siciliano, artist, memoir writer, bipolar psychiatric survivor, and your host of Not As Crazy As You Think podcast, the place that offers an alternative perspective on mental illness, highlighting creativity, non-conventional healing, and breaking on through to the other side. If you are ready for a new narrative on the mental realm that celebrates crazy and cool without penalty, then Not As Crazy As You Think is for you. It's been exactly 1 year since Not As Crazy As You Think podcast aired its first episode, and it's been such a thrilling ride. When I first started this venture, I had no idea what I was doing, and who was I to think I should start a podcast? I hadn't worked with editing or recording equipment before, and it was a huge learning curve. But over the course of 1 year, my life has changed. And today, with such loyal supporters and special people who are making my mission possible, I feel a lot more hopeful than I did a year ago. And to be honest, I feel more hopeful than I ever did regarding the movement. Because people are finally coming together to talk about an alternative to psychiatry. People are only recently beginning to see mental illness through a more compassionate and relatable lens and find solutions in mental health through peer support, alternative therapies, creativity, psychedelics, and other social supports. Before this year, I was someone still affected by psychiatry's corruption and harm. But today, when I share my story as a psychiatric survivor, I am finding people engaging in the conversation and helping others through it as well. My medical marijuana practitioner, Dr. Lynn Porodnik, showed me a way forward when I was seeking to find a support system to aid in my withdrawing from psychiatric medication after 27 years. And cannabis treatment is proving to be a successful alternative way to regulate my moods and to help me find sleep. I interview Lynn once again as she joins the discourse in episode 1 of season 3. She shares the ways patients are turning on Big Pharma to embrace a more compassionate and holistic approach in healing through plant medicine. This interview was originally recorded on September 9th, 2021, and now December is just around the corner when dispensary licensing becomes available. Tune in and find out more news on cannabis with Dr. Lynn Porodnik, and thanks for listening. Hello, this is Jen Gaeta Siciliano from Not As Crazy As You Think podcast. I want to thank you for listening to us today. We have once again with us our very special friend, Lynn Porodnik, doctor of medical marijuana and physician. She's amazing, and she's here to tell us a little bit about New York State regulations and where they're going. So thank you for joining us, Lynn, once again.
Thank you, Jen, for having me once again. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. So anyway, let's go into the new regulations. I understand that when Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, put in the Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act, it was like in the end of March or something like that, and he never rolled out any appointees for the Office of Cannabis Management. And I understand under the new governor, Kathy Hochul, she looks like she's getting things moving. So what's going on with the status of that?
Okay, they're trying. Applications are not out. They still have to form the whole, the committees. There have been a few appointments made, and our new governor has agreed to make this a priority. She's working. She has a team, and she's going to make it work. That's her promise. So basically, at this point, we still don't have the full regulations. What was proposed is different models for the recreational program. So in there, they have several approaches. First of all, it's a program that really takes into consideration minorities, people who have been locked up for cannabis usage. One of the big priorities is to give licenses to people who've been harmed by these laws, regulations, and their families, give them a chance. So that's like the primary theme of this. And then after people have been harmed with the war on drugs, they're trying to help women. Women will be considered another class of applicants given more priority. Their thinking is let's keep out the multi-state operators. There are enough set up with the medical marijuana program. Those dispensaries will get 3 recreational dispensaries. And that's it as far as MSOs to begin. They're really trying to keep the small businesses small, personable, pleasant. So the classes of licensure include, they have a micro business, which caps at 20 employees, and that's a whole vertical integration. So the theme is to grow, process, harvest, and sell. They're each allowed 1 dispensary. And from what I understand, they're required to sell their products. I don't know if they'll be able to purchase other products as well. So that's the micro business. There'll also be grant money available for those businesses, which is really nice because the prices for these programs are, it costs a lot to do that.
Yeah, I heard that like the license in just the application is like $1,000 or something like that?
More. It's more like a $10,000 application. Oh, and then if you're using one of the top shelf law firms, it's a few $100,000 for the application.
Oh my.
Gets to be very pricey for what it is. But anyway, so we have micro business. We have cultivation licenses. So there are many hemp farmers who got into the game to wait till rec comes in. Now is their opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then within the cultivation, there are farm co-ops. Farm co-ops get special privileges. It's a way that groups of people can work together, share equipment, share knowledge, make some money. So that seems to be more popular up north, such as in Washington County, Cambridge, New York. There is a collective. The main farm is Action Acres, and they have 3 farms set up to be able to, they're growing hemp, and they want to grow cannabis. And New York is also looking at, because the supply chain is going to be so poor to start, having hemp farmers get access to grow licenses, at least for the first few years. So that's pretty interesting. There's also processing manufacturing licenses. So these are the people who are going to be making vape pens, edibles, all kinds of stuff. Then there are distribution licenses. These are the people who will be selling the finished goods to the dispensaries. Then there are the dispensary licenses and consumption lounges. Towns have the right to opt out or opt in of the dispensaries and consumption lounges. Consumption lounges are actually pot bars. Mm. People can go, you can purchase stuff there, consume it, leave, and go home. The feeling is, or it's more of an urban urban vibe, urban necessity. In the suburbs, we don't want people driving inebriated. So most towns are opting out of consumption lounges. The question is, do they want dispensaries or not? And right now, there are many towns having these opt-in, opt-out meetings. What it means is the town board gets together with the town supervisor. They decide, do they want it in their town to have these stores, consumption lounges, or not? If they decide not, they can opt in at a later time. The advantage of opting in is that it's expensive to build out a store. And if you're not in there originally, you will have less people interested in you. Also, you're opting out of tax revenue at this point. Mm. And looking like tax revenue will go to New York State as well as the local municipalities. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice way for towns to get some money in the door without raising their taxes.
Other places that already put all this into effect, I mean, there's a potential of like $350 million in tax revenue that can come in. And I understand that the products will be taxed, obviously. And I read that it was 13% tax on sales, but 9% of that is for New York State. And then the rest is for local, which I think is, you know, really cool because it's distributed nicely.
Yes, absolutely. So we shall see what happens. It's interesting times. The applications are not out. It's predicted like Q1 of 2022, they'll be out and due. So we don't know. We shall see. There's going to be a lot to be played out. As of December, patients will be able to grow their own plants. Also, if people keep their medical cards, if their patients keep their cards, they will not have to pay that 13%.
Really?
Yes. It gets a little bit more interesting for patients. And they claim they're going to roll out some new products for medical patients.
Mm.
So let's hope, and let's hope the quality is good and variety is good.
You have any idea what those things might look like?
Yeah. Live resin, rosin, shatter wax, Rick Simpson oil. These are all super concentrates where people with real pain issues can benefit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People with real sleep issues will be able to benefit.
Right.
So it, hopefully these new products will be available. They're available in medical dispensaries in Rhode Island, Massachusetts.
Oh.
New York has capped the dose at 5 milligrams. That's the way the program is.
Okay.
So with expansion, they're hoping to up the ante a bit because 5 milligrams is an average female dose to get a buzz. Never mind if you have a really debilitating pain condition or something else.
I'm trying to push people to get their medical marijuana card still because I think that it's, I don't know, I guess a way to legitimize their, you know, need for these things. And a friend of mine, he has PTSD for many reasons, you know, and having to do with the army and whatnot. And, you know, he's struggling. And I'm thinking, even though it's legal, there's not those recreation dispensaries available. So it's nice to see that, you know, he's like, oh my God, there's an option for me. There's, you know, an opportunity for me to still get it. Now, he would have to still have a card at this point to go into those dispensaries?
Yes. To go to the medical dispensary, you need a card in New York State.
So for those, even though it's legal, for those people who want to engage in this substance, they would, what, get it from the black market?
There's a few choices at this point. Get a card. You're a medical patient. Get a card. Get enrolled. Stand up for yourself. Tell the, you know, basically you're telling the government, this is what you want. This is how you want to manage your life. And that's also important. There's black market products, but people get into trouble. As we've spoken about all the time, Valentine's Day in Somers, 2021, a 17-year-old kid died from cannabis laced with fentanyl. Didn't have to happen. So that's why the dispensary systems are excellent. Anyone can buy cannabis over 21 in Massachusetts. So that's an option. Get in the car, see if you like it. And if it works for you, get a card so you can then get delivery and work and get a whole system going and get this, your dosage under control and figure out how to have a decent day. So there are choices. Yeah.
But I guess we're limited really until we see what is available to us.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I feel thankful because I have my card, and I encourage anybody who especially is dealing with chronic pain or anxiety or any of those things to really consider, you know, doing cannabis treatment. It's changed my life and I think it will do that for others. But in the meantime, you were stating that there's medical dispensaries and then the recreation dispensaries when they do come about in December, that will be different or will it be merged?
No, they'll be separate. The new regs say that I'm not sure when the dispensaries will open that are owned by the medical establishments, but each medical establishment gets 3 recreational licenses.
Nice.
Yeah. So there will be expansion and there'll be more stuff available for people.
Oh, that's good. Yes. So they'll sit like, say if like, for instance, the one I use is in Newburgh and I understand their farm is close by to that area, the Curaleaf dispensary. And in their case, they would get 3 recreational additional locations or opportunities.
In New York.
And then would they like be able to sprinkle it around wherever they want?
I'm not sure. Each state handles it differently. So often they'll have within the same store, the medical will be on one side, the rec on the other.
Mm.
Yeah. because these buildings are expensive to build out. The security is really intense. You need vaults in there because remember, it's a cash business.
Mm. Now, when is that going to change? I understand it's cash because
banking laws, cannabis is federally illegal. Therefore, banks are not allowed to let cannabis businesses have bank accounts. That's why the ceilings get very interesting in these dispensaries and all kinds of places. But you really do need vaults and it gets kind of complicated. So there's a lot to be worked out, a lot of details to see.
Yeah, a lot of details. I was looking at the cannabis department, I guess office, it's called Office of Cannabis Management. They put out a report. Anyway, it's like 100 pages.
Uh-huh.
Like every little thing. It's great that like it's all written out and they're really going thorough about it. There's a hemp wing, right? And then there's like medical cannabis and then there's like recreation. Like how are those things treated differently? I understand like hemp products would contain things like CBD oil and stuff like that. They're in that group, is it?
Yes. If it has less than 0.3% THC, okay, it's considered a hemp product. It's actually the same plant, but just the quantity of THC makes it hemp or cannabis. So that's all that means.
Oh, okay.
Then, right. Then you have medical versus rec. It's the same products made in the same way. It's just a label. Everything is thoroughly lab tested, which is super important. And it's the same manufacturer in the same place. So it's not like there's a separate factory for recreation. It's all same place and same products.
So in your opinion, what is the benefit then? If everything's going to be recreational, if it is the same product, what is the benefit of getting a medical card still?
You don't have to pay 13% tax. Also, they're saying that the medical should have stronger products than the recreational feature. More tailored to patients' needs than just fun and games.
Gotcha.
So it remains to be seen, but we're staying hopeful.
So like in that case, you mean like maybe the high concentrates, right?
Yes.
The resins and stuff like that?
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Because then like, what is the purpose? How is that recreational if it's used for like high level pain and...
It becomes a little bit more than rec. It's rec plus launch to the moon. And do people really need to go there? I'm not the guardian of everybody's brain, but you need to think twice what you're doing.
Right.
The nice piece is even if people are getting very inebriated, it will wear off and their memory will return. But once they're working with this stuff, the high THC, their experiences, they don't remember too much under mm-hmm. So that's really something to keep in mind. Also driving, being productive. We hope people are able to, once they're pain-free, to be able to resume the things they like, the things they need to do. That's really the ambition, not just to have fun and games.
Right. Well, it's really interesting because so many drugs that people are on, they are prescribed for pain management.
Yes.
There's a lot of medications, if you're taking a few for pain management, that you could eventually just like dwindle, you know, in your group of things that you need to put into your body every day. I mean, you don't need that much stuff if you have something like this to offset what those things do in your life.
Exactly. And with cannabis, you can't overdose. You'd have to smoke 20,000 joints in 20 minutes. Also, you don't harm your liver, you don't harm your kidneys, you don't harm your lungs. The safety profile is really nice.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, that safety profile, when I looked at it.
It's great. And that's another reason why people rather work with cannabis than work with other meds, that they end up needing more meds to counteract side effects.
Right. Right. And I just always go to the fact that it is natural. It's a plant. You know,
yes,
I just think that's so important because, you know, big pharma doesn't work like that. Now, one of the things I love about this program is that they're trying to keep the culture behind it. The idea that these are plants and that you can use it differently and they can be, used in different forms, not just a pill form. Do you anticipate that that might be something of the future, that Big Pharma kind of latches onto this and says, well, now we're making pot pills, you know, or whatever?
Absolutely. Why wouldn't they? They're making a buck. And pot is the largest cash crop in the United States. Therefore, they're in by definition. Right. So we'll see what they do with it. Plants really can't be copywritten, but I suspect they'll find a way around it. I don't trust these people to just play clean and nice in the same
way. Right. And then they might come up with synthetic.
They've done it already. And patients don't like it. They say that they really can tell the difference. You know, it's plant medicine is really interesting and really works. Somehow Big Pharma thinks that, you know, they can make stuff. People will buy it, consume it, next. And people are saying, no, thank you. You know, people are coming off some meds, switching in some cannabis and saying, we're not going there anymore.
Right.
So it's very interesting times.
It is, because it's an alternative. Finally, it's an alternative.
Yes. And it is so helpful with so many different things. That's what gets really amazing.
Right.
And also it's a biphasic drug. So a little bit gives you one effect, too much, you get the opposite. So there are a lot of factors here. Also, when you look at Big Pharma products, they're usually, it's one thing in there. Or if it's a combo pill, you know, like carbidopa, then it's like a big deal. There are two things in there. Now, cannabis has over 400 identified components. Hmm. That's a lot.
Right.
And also, everybody responds so differently. So it gets very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And also teach patients a lot. There's a really a very nice community of moms with kids on the spectrum. They all swap notes. Some of them are using cannabis leaves instead of just CBD and what the medical program can provide. Some of them are juicing with these product with the leaves and really going for it and trying to develop specific regimens for their kids. But since Spectrum seems to be a lot of different diseases looped in under one name, different kids will have different experiences. And our job is really to try to dose them and give them the things they need to have a much more comfortable life.
Right. Right. I just think it's so important that they really are trying to keep with the traditional delivery system of the drug. I hope that they're going to maintain that. I feel like that's an integral part of the success of this, because most people who smoke it anyway, they enjoy the culture.
Yes. And the culture is a culture of kindness. Pot people don't get into fights. If it's too much, they nod out. Poor people get into fights. And it's just within the cannabis community, people tend to be nice. They tend to want to help one another. It's a caring, giving community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the spirit of all this came from. You have these advocacy people who have found solutions for diseases. They don't necessarily get paid too much for it, but the satisfaction they get is really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you've worked with so many people, and I know that you've seen night and day transformations. And, you know, having been with people for, I'm sure, over the course of time, years, right? I mean, do you feel that their lives have truly improved in the way their daily living is?
Absolutely. I had a woman who was about 80 years old. She had a stroke 8 years prior, she'll say. I went to visit her. The first time I saw her, she called me that bitch. Then I was the lady. Then I was lady doctor. She got nice. That was the most amazing thing. She was pretty belligerent and pretty mean initially. She passed. She was older and her body just couldn't take it anymore. And they asked me to come to the wake and the funeral. Funerals, I don't like. Wakes, I can handle from the back of the room. So I went and all these people are hugging me and I couldn't figure out, like, what is this about? Then they start saying, you don't get it. She got nice. She got so nice. They bought a tricked out van to take her out. No one wanted to be with her for years and years because she would basically spit venom at you. Wow. But then what we worked with was a slight amount of the tincture in the morning, a THC dominant that was a mood elevator, and it was enough to make her comfortable and have an okay day. So in this case, I mean, that was a wow.
Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. See how much you're affecting so many other people's lives. This is so wonderful to hear.
Oh, thank you.
It's true.
Important though. Also, one nice thing about cannabis is patients really need to ask their clinicians questions. Make the clinician work for the consult. Don't just accept paperwork. Read a little before you go. Ask them for articles. Ask them for specifics about your condition. Ask about their success rates with your condition. What do they suggest? What usually works? What's the oddball one they've treated with your condition?
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I hear complaints of, and, you know, it's an issue, and we've discussed this too. I know people who want this in their lives, and they want either a card or they want information from their doctor. And because there's so, it's such a slow embracing of this on much of the medical community. How does a person approach their own physician? And I mean, it's almost like you have to talk them into it, which doesn't feel good as a patient.
No, it doesn't. But people need to understand this is relatively new. It's still not taught in medical school.
Right.
And the cannabinoid system is totally not there in medical curriculum. We know it exists and we know it works. That's why we have these programs. So it becomes a huge effort to educate medical students to begin. At least medical students are familiar with cannabis. If they haven't used it, their friends have, and it becomes not that big a deal. So I think there's a good future, but it's going to take a while to catch up. As far as older clinicians, they don't really get it. Some of them will do a certification for a patient. They have no clue. It's just they basically act as a gatekeeper, give the person their papers, and the patient can learn at the dispensary. So there's all different ways to skin this cat.
Now, is it the type of thing where it's understood in the medical community that because it's legal and there is guiding research that says this is effective and okay? I know it's limited, the research, because of the federal scheduling, but is it the type of thing where as a medical doctor, they need to be open and respond, or is it respond to their patient's wishes? Or is it really a judgmental thing where they come at it, well, I don't believe in that treatment?
Both.
Okay.
Even physicians are much more open. The older ones are, no, this isn't you. You don't need to go there, all that. So it really depends. And then there are also older physicians who see the benefits of it and are really like doing this work. So it's really all across the board. There are cardiologists writing pot certs now. I saw somebody last week who got one from her cardiologist, but he didn't really know the difference between THC and CBD. So he couldn't explain how this works. So she came to me for the educational background.
Right. Now, would you suggest, like, say if you said, okay, well, this person went to the cardiologist, would you suggest, like, if one's doctor doesn't come on board, you could probably get this from other doctors as well?
In New York State, there's a website that lists all the doctors and nurse practitioners and PAs who are doing this by choice. As a clinician, you can say you want to be listed or not list yourself. Depends on how you want to do it. Some doctors are doing this for people in their practice only. Others are like, I am only doing cannabis. So that is my practice.
Can you tell others of your website and where we can find you?
Okay. It's under my name, drlynnparodnick.com, LYNNPARODNECK. I have articles in there. I have webcasts. But if you just Google my name, there's a lot more out there that I don't include.
And you're taking new patients?
Absolutely. I wouldn't miss them for the world.
Where do you usually do your patient connection? Do you do Zoom or is it just local?
I do Zoom. I do phone. I hate Zoom, to be honest with you. I get a little into looking at dermal abrasions and acne. Any distraction positive to me, I take advantage of. So phone, I concentrate much better than Zoom. I do in-personals. I'm an in-person gal. I really think it's important to have a relationship with the patient, to see them, to understand the subtleties, and to get a feel. And on a computer, I don't get that at all. It just kind of like gets mushy on me.
So you're in Upper Westchester County in New York, if people want to find you and come to your place, but also you can help them in other ways as well.
Yes. Also, if somebody can't come to me because of physical impairment, I'll do a house call.
Nice.
And there are times that's the only way you can get this accomplished.
The doctor thing, I feel, is still a concern for most patients. Because I've been talking a lot to people about the whole, oh, get your card, you know, it's worth it. You know, you could go about it as terms of a treatment. They sit with you at the dispensaries. They're, you know, pretty cool. They're walking through the prescription that your doctor writes out. Now, like, it's just so sad to me that there's a resistance because I feel like it's a medical truth that's being ignored right now by people who are supposed to be smart, who are helping people, but they're ignoring it.
Well, because they're putting their own perceptions first. Remember, people were raised, our generation, this is your brain on drugs, scrambled egg. Cannabis is a gateway drug, on and on and on. We were raised that this is really bad, horrible, that you could kill yourself from this, which is, as we know, baloney. So there's going to be a whole change in attitude. There and younger physicians, residents, use cannabis. I mean, it's part of our culture in the United States at this point. It's not for everybody, but it's an option to drinking alcohol that many people prefer.
Now, you mentioned that there isn't that much effect of the lungs with cannabis use, which is an interesting thing because a lot of people smoke it.
Right.
It doesn't have the same effect as cigarettes.
No. There's a lot of studies done in Jamaica with this concept. Jamaica is a very heavy cannabis-cultured society, and even pregnant women are working with cannabis. That I don't go for. It's my background is in OBGYN. I am fearful of teratogens. It's just, you look at the thalidomide babies and I can't in good conscience say, oh, it's all fine.
Right.
According to the numbers in Jamaica, it's all fine. But I still, in my gut, say, if you're pregnant, please wait till after you have a baby. It's such a short amount of time.
Right.
And it can make such a huge difference. So give your kid the max. Go for it.
So is there any other thing that you feel is important for the user of today, the recreational user of today, in terms of like, what to plan for, or what to look forward to? Or I know that, you know, it feels weird because, like, for instance, I was in New York City yesterday and they were actually like some people who were, I guess, in the black market were like on the street selling these pots. And I'm thinking to myself, nobody knows where this is from.
Right.
You know, and people are smoking around. It's just a totally different thing, like to see people with blunts and stuff. I just find it to be like, wow, you know, things have totally changed. But which is like kind of a nice feeling for someone like me who's a user. But where does the recreational person feel like? Are they completely safe? They're completely safe, right? There's not any kind of law that's going to hurt them at this point.
A recreational user, it depends if they have excessive amount. We're allowed, I believe in New York, you can have 3 ounces of cannabis and not receive any. There's no criminal anything. It's decriminalized. But if you have large quantities, it would indicate you would like to sell and the laws are different.
So basically, you cannot sell unless you have a license.
Exactly. And the only people with licenses are the medical dispensaries at this point.
At this point.
Another change that's going to occur in December is that as a physician, I will have the right to determine that a patient would benefit from cannabis, which is huge. Because at this point, I'm not allowed to write if a kid is on the spectrum. Spectrum alone isn't enough to get a kid medical marijuana. They have to have either PTSD or chronic pain. This is a population that's been bullied. This is a population with a lot of GI issues. So we can do it. But why can't we do it in a simpler way and have to, and not need to go on that fishing trip? If a physician evaluates somebody and it seems that Valium would help, they don't have to look at a list and say, oh, this person can't have it because they're not on that list. So that's a really nice plus of the program for December.
That's a big thing because, I mean, I know with psych meds, that's used constantly. Like that idea that, okay, well, it's not designed for this particular thing, but I'm going to prescribe it anyway.
Right.
And we'll see how it goes. And that's based on the judgment of the physician.
Right. Off-label.
Off-label, yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of uses and medications do work off-label. So the nice thing is there will be that option.
And that doesn't occur till December, though?
Correct.
Things have changed an enormous amount. I mean, I started seeing you, oh gosh, I can't remember, maybe April or something like that. And when we started talking about this then, it seems so far away, but so true. I mean, September, it's already
coming. Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. So let me ask you about these consumption lounges. We've discussed it quickly, but I want to throw it in there before I let you go. What are we possibly going to be able to partake in places like New York City? Because that is an urban area and that would be perfect for consumption lounges. I know that you said that some of them aren't allowed to use the alcohol or to also serve alcohol. It's a pot alone.
Pot alone. And it's looking like there'll be anything and everything, vape cartridges, flower, pre-rolls, just like what else is out there in California. And California has consumption lounges. It's kind of a shaky business at this point, but the regs are getting regulated, we'll put it that way. So basically they're bars, you hang out, use cannabis products and go home. Simple.
Mm. Mm. Well, we love it. We love the way this industry is shaping up little by little. There was a point at which we'd have to like find a little side corner to take one hit, you know, and now everyone's just in the middle
now
of everywhere.
Smoke in front of the police and it's all good.
It's so weird to me, but it's nice because that decriminalization makes you feel like, okay, you're normal and not like this criminal, you know.
A citizen who pays taxes.
Yes.
You want to be a citizen, not like a little drug person hiding in corners and
right.
Being secretive. It, for what?
And also, there's a lot of people who are in certain kinds of groups, like artists, like, you know, people who would normally partake in this, who are also been very ostracized because of things like that. You know, like, oh, they're a bunch of potheads or whatnot. And now...
Who cares?
Right.
People don't care, which is very nice. You know, it allows patients to lead their lives, allows people to be creative, use their brains, add a little cannabis, do their day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole new world.
It is. It is. And I, again, that idea of using it in the way that's traditionally used in terms of like plant medicine, I think is also very respectful to the whole approach of any indigenous society who uses plant medicines for their natural healing. I want it to stay like that. And I think that the way they're moving forward seems as though they have the same thing in mind.
They're trying.
Yeah.
Absolutely trying.
Right. Well, it's a great time to be alive in alternative medical treatments. So I thank you again, Lynn, for joining us. And we can't wait to have you back.
Thanks, Jen. It's always fun to be here. We always have a great time.
Thanks for listening to Not As Crazy As You Think, and don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. And remember, mental health is attainable for anyone, especially those labeled with mental illness. Until next time, peace out.